How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. It's all clear in the Midwest this morning, and with the markets getting ready for crop production estimates from USDA at the end of the week, they better pay attention to the harvest pace and on-the-fly harvest reports and planting progress in South America. We'll get an update this morning from the new NCGA president.
Live from a magnificent Monday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Then it's on to the new president of the National Corn Growers Association, Mr. John Linder. And in the final segment, Greta Gustafson from the American Red Cross. And right after the news, Kirk Hins from BAMWX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting conversation with Greta Gustafson. I mean, Machinery Pete, obviously. John Linder, yes, sure. I'm looking forward to that. Yes. But Greta Gustafson, because the focus, as I understand it, on fire prevention is all about the kitchen. Okay?
Okay.
Well, when I think about fire prevention this year, I'm thinking about the combine and how little slowdown time there is. So take time to blow that machine out. Take time to make sure that you're that your fire extinguisher is ready to roll and handy. Take time to make sure that you're doing what you can to prevent a big black cloud of smoke from rising up from out of one of your cornfields.
Well, and just as a public service announcement, if I can quote Frankenstein, fire bad. Just keep that in mind. I don't care if it's wildfires, kitchen fires, combine fires.
With Frank on this.
Yes. He and I were talking over the weekend, actually, and he wanted to make sure, you know, knowing that Ms. Gustafson was going to be on, that we, you know, we let the people know that he supports fire prevention.
He's got to be excited about the end of the month, right?
Oh, so excited. So excited. It's like it's his one day out of the year when people aren't scared of him, you know?
Really? Really? Has he been working out, though, you know, maybe doing a few extra laps, getting ready to outrun the crowd with the pitchforks and torches and everything? Is he ready to go?
With Frankenstein, it's not about physical fitness. It's not about the cardio. He's got the strength. It's the gait. It's the walk. I'm like, dude, bend your knees when you walk. That's why people are scared of you. You walk around like freaking Frankenstein. Bend your knees, bro. He got a little better by the end of the weekend.
All right, good, good. Well, I'm glad that you spent that time with him. Fire bad.
Just trying to help.
Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, U.S. equity futures opened higher after news that President Donald Trump could be released from the hospital as soon as today, according to Johns Hopkins pulmonary expert Brian Garibaldi, who is on Trump's medical team. The president made a surprise outing from Walter Reed National Military Medical Center on Sunday, waving to supporters gathered outside from his motorcade. We mentioned this, I believe it was on Friday, that if he's going to show up and make some sort of statement, some sort of appearance, he better be looking good. Did he do it here?
Yeah, I think he did. He's looking good, but he's catching all kinds of criticism for exposing the Secret Service agents to him in a limousine, confined spaces of a limousine. So can't win for losing.
Ag interests will watch the trade data earlier in the week, but the attention will largely be on Friday when USDA updates its forecasts for U.S. spring crop production. But the monthly WASDE report will also be key as traders will watch how USDA analysts incorporate the September grain stocks data into their balance sheet. As the 2019-20 marketing year, as we said, drew to a close August 31, USDA made surprise adjustments to both corn and soybeans, with the final carryover marks for 2019-20 on corn and soybeans lower than expected. Plus, USDA is seen using FSA enrollment data to adjust 2020 planted acreage levels, Chip.
Yep. The adjustments are really pretty simple when you get right down to it. Beginning stocks on corn now 1.995 billion bushels. It's not 2 billion something. It is a 1.995. And That can have a psychological impact, but it also has a real impact on the bottom line. We're going to tighten up our stocks for the 2020-21 marketing year.
Yep. And the president is pressing for a deal on another round of pandemic aid to help the U.S. economic recovery, saying the country, quote, wants and needs fiscal stimulus. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Friday that negotiations with the White House will press ahead, and Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis might change the tenor of those talks by underscoring the seriousness of the pandemic. Pelosi said to executives in the U.S. airline industry, quote, don't fire people. Relief is on the way. Democrats and Republicans remain divided on how much to spend on relief, however. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Friday that the talks have, quote, sped up in the last few days, although McConnell did not make a prediction about the eventual outcome. How much longer are we going to be talking about this? I mean, it's the same really story. They don't agree, you know?
Really tough situation trying to figure out exactly how much should be spent on industries that are going to go through some real adjustments going forward because of changes in consumer habits.
And speaking of industries adjusting, almost three quarters of the pandemic-driven job losses in the U.S. petroleum and chemical sectors may not come back before the end of the year. Yeah. That's according to research from Deloitte. The collapse in oil demand and prices spurred the fastest rate of oil and chemical industry layoffs in history, with about 107,000 jobs eliminated between March and August, Deloitte said in a study scheduled to be released today. And finally, the U.S. Supreme Court last week added an important climate change case to its docket, giving oil and gas companies another shot at avoiding big liability claims from state and local governments. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in a meteorologist, Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. How are you this morning, Kirk? Good to talk with you.
Oh, good to talk with you too, Chip. I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Doing just fine. All clear in the Midwest this week, huh?
It feels like we're going on the third or fourth week of saying that. I mean, we're definitely feeling the La Nina. It's a little bit later than kind of what we thought, but boy, we're in this pattern where there's just not a lot of weather. So in terms of harvest perspective, probably ideal, I would say, and I think that can continue too.
Excellent. What about the Southeast? They've got another storm to deal with, don't they?
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some tropical influences as we go later this week and into the weekend and early next week. Some of the details are still up for grabs here, but some heavy rainfall, some potential tropical storm, tropical depression-like winds and impacts are definitely looking likely.
All right, La Nina influence up here. What about down in Brazil?
Oh, yeah. So the next 5 to 7 days, I mean, we're talking near record heat for central Brazil, absolutely no rainfall. There is some suggestion of some increased rains as we're going into next week. I'm still in the camp where, you know, it hasn't rained in the last 60 days. We got to take some caution with that. But there at least on the horizon looks to be some relief. In terms of the scope of that, I'm still questioning.
Yeah. Are you talking southern Brazil or those northern production areas?
Yep, central Brazil, Mato Grosso do Sul, Goiás, those kind of main hub areas that have been so hot and dry for so long.
Yeah, and it's like you said, once it stops raining and it gets as dry as it is down there in some areas, Kirk, it's just difficult to make it rain.
Yeah. It is. You know, I go by the feedback, you know, dry can breed dry. And it doesn't matter what the forecast models say. We've seen it time and time again that it can just remain that way for longer. So I think that could happen here.
Okay, so a little bit of relief potential in the not-too-distant future. Longer term, does it look like this pattern is stuck?
We're definitely going to hang around with this dryness. I think that's the key takeaway with La Nina. So I think that'll be a story for the months to come.
Excellent. Kirk, thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you again later.
Appreciate it, Chip.
All right, that's Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. All right, coming up next, we got Machinery Pete. Greg Peterson right here on AgriTalk. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh. I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone? That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Bands come and go. Just watch your money. You'll land on your feet.
Oh, as you have probably figured out, that's one of our favorites here at AgriTalk.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, every now and then you're going to hear the Oneater reference just because we can't help it.
And it shouldn't be helped. I mean, for Pete's sake.
That's right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jeff Florey. That is Davis Michelson. Hope you all had a great and safe weekend, and we're getting back at it here on a Monday morning, and that means that it's time for a conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, and any reference to that thing you do, that movie, makes me smile. So thanks for that, guys.
Good, good, good. That's a blue ribbon comment right there. I like that. I like that a lot.
I like one of my favorite lines from the movie is I think it was Lenny. Lenny's my favorite character in that movie, and presidential flashcards.
Yeah.
from the cards.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes. Love that as well. Love it. All right, man. Let's get to it. What you got for the pick of the week? This is like mind blowing to me, this one.
Yeah, pick of the week, we're going to go focus on smaller horsepower tractors. There was a sale Saturday up north of where I grew up, kind of west central Minnesota, up in Dalton. Our friends at Austin's Auctioneers had it was kind of a small farm sale, not many items on it, but they did have a tractor, a 2013 Case IH Farmall 50B, so of course 50 horsepower. Thing only had 190 hours on it, so literally like new. Front wheel assist with the L350 loader, 6 foot material bucket, and it sold for $33,000, which I knew when I saw it, I was like, man, that seems really high. So, of course, I checked our cross referenced our database at machinerypete.com, and it is, in fact, a record price. The previous high I'd seen was 28 and a quarter back 4.5 years ago on a bigiron.com online auction. So 33K, you know, very intense bidding on that one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There were two people there, at least two people there that really wanted that tractor.
Yeah. That's
because it feels
price.
Like, it feels to me like you could walk into a dealership and probably get a similar deal on a new one.
Well, it's true because it's exactly right, Chip. In fact, when I saw that sale price, I went into our dealer listings on machinerypete.com and I did used our search filters and I filtered down that horsepower range around 50 horse, give or take, in under that hour range to 200 horse. And yeah, you can either newer ones, but again, the power of the auction, you got one shot to buy this thing. It's like new condition. A little bit older, and it does continue a trend we've seen that started in April where the buyer demand for these, you know, kind of under 100 horse, but particularly down 50 and under horse, the demand for them just skyrocketed in 2020.
Well, you know, I think so. There's got to be some COVID influence on this. People are staying home. They're doing more stuff at home and they're thinking to themselves, you know what, doggone it, this would be a whole lot easier if I had blank.
Exactly. Yeah, no question about it. I think, you read the trends here, and again, you have to focus on also who is the buyer here. So, yeah. 50 horsepower, you got some acreage, whatever.
Yep.
And, if people's 401ks bounce back there, if your job is safe, people are banking more money, and then, of course, having to spend more time at home, and then, like you say, just investing in your properties. And again, we saw it's really interesting, in the month of April, we can track day by day the search traffic to different categories, and it just literally went skyward on these 40 to 50 horse tractors.
Yeah.
So, again, not surprising to see that super strong price there Saturday.
Yeah, super strong is probably a good way of putting that one, Greg. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're understated up here in Minnesota.
I love it. All right, what else? Let's talk about the auction over in Central Indiana last week.
Yeah, Friday, our friends at Ted Everett Equipment, central part of the state, Monrovia, Indiana, had a sale. Now, of course, folks know Ted, a legend in the business there, and his great crew. They have huge sales, but of course they also have farm sales. And on this sale Friday, they had a farm sale within the bigger sale. And I posted a little blog on this, a really nice line of equipment. Hope I'm pronouncing this right, but the Noost farm sale. I'll just give you a few prices, highlights, folks. They had a Case IH 8230 combine with tracks, 1991 engine hours. That brought $150,000. Then if we drift into the heads, they had a Gehringhoff Northstar 8-row corn head with a corn reel. That brought $27,000. They had a 2014 McDon FD75S Draper head, $42,000. Big four-wheel drive, Case IH Steiger 435, 4,145 hours. That brought $95,500. Maybe the hottest item that I thought on the sale was a Challenger MT475B tractor. 1,495 hours with a diamond side boom mower. That brought $67,000. And then one more for you, a Kinsey 1051 grain cart on tracks, $67,500.
Okay. Those hours and everything, I mean, this equipment was used equipment. It's not like it was purchased and put away or anything like that. So this is a pretty representative auction, isn't it?
It is, and that's why we like to mix it around. It's cool to talk about the ones that have 100 hours, 200 hours.
Yeah.
And, hey, geez, how high they go. But, again, we try to cover the whole spectrum. So it's nice to see stuff that has, regular usage on it. And, the prices, there were some good buys in there, but definitely market rate on the stuff there. I think we ran some averages on the 8230 combine. And again, did have tracks, but that 150 was quite a bit over the average price. So again, just interesting to see how many hours, what stuff's bringing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of course, you talk about the collector items out there too. You got a big one coming up in Ocheyedan. Big Iron does.
Yeah, the sale this Wednesday, folks. If you caught my blog, actually a video I did, an interview. There's a guy. His name is Larry Leckband out of Ocheyedan, Iowa, and he's got over 100 items on the sale Wednesday. I think the Big Iron Sale Wednesday, they're kind of billing it as their antique-focused auction. But Larry's got some really cool stuff. I met him a couple times, and he told me, Pete, you got to get down and look at this stuff. And I'm actually going down tomorrow. We're going to film it.
Oh, good.
But he's got a 1959 Minneapolis Moline Unitractor Model L power unit with a two-row Unihusker.
Yeah.
So, again, we posted video of Larry running that for the last time this weekend. Tractors, he's got a 1976 International Hydro 100 front wheel assist industrial tractor loader backhoe, kind of a prototype deal.
Really?
I don't know that I've ever seen one. And again, it's not like it's been restored or pristine, but it's just cool, super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'll be interesting. And then he's got one chip that you find interesting, a 1940 Farmall A, and it looks like it's been restored, but it's original paint. And Larry tells the story in the video I posted. He was driving to Minneapolis years ago, and they had road construction, so he was ticked off. He's taking the roads, and he looked to his left, and he saw, oh, it looks like an auction over there. So he pulled off the road, and he gets out there, and this farm all he's got just layers of dust on it. And he buys it, good price, whatever. And then a guy comes running up, and it turns out that a young man had bought that new and then went off to World War II and was killed. And the thing literally sat in the barn and had decades and decades of dust on it.
Dust on it.
But it looks like new. And that's up on the sale Wednesday, too. So one of those unusual stories.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one that you'd like to get your hands on right there, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
If you want a pickup, they got a 67 International 1100B white that just looks cherry. Oh. If you're into vintage pickups, folks, check that out. It is sweet.
I love it. All right. So machinerypete.com. In the month of October, what are you doing? You got something cool going on.
Yeah, we just threw this out. Folks, if you bought anything off our website in the last month, just go to machinerypete.com. You'll see a little link. It'll say shop and score. And just click the link. We're going to send you a Machinery Pete hat or a $25 Visa gift card. Just let us know what you bought. And, again, we really appreciate all your folks, going out to machinerypete.com looking for equipment. And, again, don't forget, all the auction prices are free out there now. Just click on auction prices. You can look at all the stuff I'm looking at every day.
I was just going to say that that change right there, boy, the amount of information that's available at machinerypete.com. And go there before you buy. Don't buy and then go and see if you got a good deal. Check it out first, right?
Right. Be an informed buyer. Absolutely. That's why I've been doing this for 30 years.
That's right. Greg, it's good to talk with you again, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Chip. See ya.
All right. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Coming up next, we got the new president of NCGA, John Linder, right here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Geez, Beach, I take a look at what's going on in this grain markets, and your attention goes straight to the wheat. Big gains there.
Yeah, double-digit gains in the winter wheat market so far this morning, Chip. And dryness in the U.S. Southern Plains, that's a concern. The Black Sea region, both Ukraine and Russia have dryness issues there. And so that's given us some support. And I think really, wheat's kind of been a laggard recently, and this is allowing them to catch up a little bit. The spillover influence is impacting corn in that they're trading fractionally higher. We also had a daily corn sale to Mexico this morning. So that's given us a little bit of price support. But, I look at the corn and soybean markets and limited buyer interest in corn. Soybeans under a little bit of price pressure. And I think that's the ramp up in harvest activity, not only that we saw last week, but that we'll see this week as well.
Boy, it looks like it's all systems go for the week ahead, Brian. That's got to bring some hedge pressure in here. Let's go ahead and hop on over to livestock because we've got some strength in the cattle complex.
Yeah, outside markets had an influence there last Friday. President Trump announced that he got COVID. Stock market was under pressure. We've reversed that, and the stock market's trading higher today, and cattle are responding as well to the upside. So, I think ultimately now that there's a dual focus with the outside markets and then the cash. We won't see the cash trade until later on in the week. So right now the outside markets are dominating there. On the hog side of things, a little bit of price pressure up in the front end of the market, a little bit of strength in the back end, but all in all, it's a pretty quiet start to the week in the hog market.
Yeah, it certainly is a quiet start. All right, Brian, thank you, buddy. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Trust in Food for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's always fun to talk with Greg Peterson. Davis, mm-hmm. Machinery Pete,
yes.
But it's become less fun in 2020 for me because of some of that hobby farm equipment.
Oh.
I'm usually in the market for some of that stuff, but this stuff's blowing me away right now.
Yeah.
$33,000 for a 50 horsepower tractor is, it's only 7 years old. I get that. There's a lot of life left in that thing. Probably more life than I've got left in me.
Sounds like you may have missed the opportunity.
I may have missed my opportunities, yes.
You got to strike while the iron's hot is what they
say. Right. Yeah, I may have failed on that one.
Yeah, you'll get there, buddy. You'll get there.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. All right, let's have a conversation right now with John Linder. John is the new president of the National Corn Growers Association. He joins us right now. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. Doing well.
Good, good, good. So tell us about your operation out there in Ohio.
You know, we have a corn, soybeans, seed beans, and occasionally soft red winter wheat row crop farm here about an hour north of Columbus in central Ohio near Edison, Ohio.
All right. How'd 2020 treat you out there? Weren't you kind of had a dry spell that you had to deal with, didn't you?
We did, but as most dry spells, it began with a wet spell. We had a little difficulty getting things planted for a second year in a row. Last year, we took prevent plant for the first time and actually ended up with a little bit of it this year, planted right up until the crop insurance date, and then it rained again.
Yeah. Yeah, and attitude was different at the end of the, on that last plant date in 2020 than it was in 2019. Seems like it was pretty easy to pull the pin on the planter when that last plant date came around this year.
For us, it feels like that plant date is 10 days too far out. Seems like if we get completed by May 25th, it works out a lot better than our June 5th corn does.
Gotcha. I get that. So how did this happen, John? How did you end up being president of NCGA?
I guess stars aligned. I really don't know. I think back about it, and a good friend of mine, Anthony Bush, asked me about probably 10 and a half years ago to consider being on a board in Ohio. So I'm currently wrapping up my ninth year, my full term with the Ohio Corn Marketing Board. But during that time, I took the opportunity to take leadership with National Corn and elected to get on an action team, one of the subcommittees of the board, trade policy and biotech at the time, and ended up chairing that a couple of years as I stayed on it for a while. And then, obviously with the recognition of giving reports to the delegate body and appreciation from the team members on how I led, it was just the right opportunity to consider running for the board, and was successful. 3 years as National Corn Board member with NCGA, I thought, it's probably a good time if you're ever going to do it, throw your name in the hat to go for the officer rotation. And due to being successful, a year as first vice president, now I'm president, which seems ominous as the wife. When I woke up that morning, I was quite certain the earth had begun spinning a little faster. And then my wife said, "Good morning, Mr. President." I'm thinking, you've said a lot of things fondly to me before, but never that. So 40 years of marriage, she's a peach.
I love that. That's awesome. That's awesome. So here you are. You know what? I want to hear a little bit more about the time that you spent on the Ohio Corn Marketing Board. What did that experience give you? Because what I'm thinking about, John, is tell somebody out there that's thinking, gee, should I get on a state board, why they should do it.
Chip, I hope I'm not having a little trouble with my signal. I didn't get all of your question.
No, you sound good. Let me come back at you with that. Yeah, you sound real good. Tell me about your time on the Ohio Corn Marketing Board. I want to hear some more about that at the state level and why you might encourage somebody that's out there thinking, gee, should I get involved in this? Would you encourage them to do that?
Oh, absolutely. So, I'll just give you a little background. Wife and I, when we were raising our daughters, we told them when they wanted to commit something, you're either in or out. No one's looking for someone just to warm a seat. And so I give it a year before I committed to saying, I'll run for the marketing board, because I want to make sure it was okay with the family, and I want to make sure that I was fully prepared to give it my all. And boy, I got on the board in the first couple of meetings. I thought, well, you're a fish out of water. These guys are really smart. I knew that there were good people working on our behalf and stewarding the checkoff dollars for which we contribute. I had no idea the depth of their knowledge and their passion toward furthering our industry. And so you know, when you're working with really great people, you get real drive. And I got to tell you, Fred Yoder was still on the board with me at the time. So what a great mentor. I still look up at Fred and owe him a debt of gratitude for all he's done. So when you work with really good people, they kind of drive you, and you have a little bit of self-motivation to at least perform at their level. And so, yes, anybody that has passion for the corn industry ought to consider, you know, it starts with a membership. Certainly you're contributing your checkoff dollars to a really great cause, but it starts with a membership, and you get on board, and the opportunities to plug in and engage are quite numerous.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, what's the priority list look like right now? I know that the Next Generation Fuels Act has got to be high on the list, if not the number one item.
You know, it is our number one legislative item, and it needs to be. We find market opportunities for corn to be a bit challenging, especially in this time, but we're digging into it with our recovery plan that past president Kevin Ross, now chair, I elected to have him continue chairing that effort for us. But when you look at the opportunities for corn, there's always challenges that come with them. So when we introduced a cost-efficient, environmentally friendly, renewable fuel enhancement to the liquid fuels market, we knew there would be resistance every step of the way, right?
Yep.
Since the ethanol market has yet to reach maturity, we're continuing those steps forward, and we'll find resistance there. But let us not forget, the world was flat at one time. People resist change sometimes, as we know all too well, for decades.
Yep.
But very fortunate to have Sherry Bustos, representative from Illinois, introduce Next Generation Fuels Act into the U.S. House. You know, supporting higher blends of ethanol and liquid fuels market will grind more corn. It'll be a big lift. It's a big deal. We'll need our membership to not only be with us every step of the way, but very likely to bring a friend with them.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Bring a friend with you. This is it's not a complete 180 shift in how ethanol is being marketed, but I love the fact that behind the Next Generation Fuels Act is the octane value of ethanol, John. That has been a message that I've been trying to build up and support and deliver for a while now, but we're back to marketing on octane and tailpipe emissions. It's a really positive message that we can tell.
Well, really, really glad to give you an opportunity to further that conversation and be glad to help you do that, because you're absolutely right. The value of the octane not only comes to the cost efficiency of the product. It, you know, early on, we knew that there was value to ethanol as an octane, that even in greenhouse gas emissions, as you mentioned, in tailpipe, but we didn't really realize how green it really is. And one of the drives we have with this is EPA and others are using 10-year-old models to place the credit or the value in it. And we need those updates because it is so much more than it was realized in the beginning. And so this bill will highlight that. And it should have a little bit of something for everyone in it.
Cool. Okay. Market-driven revenue, John. We've got the potential for a recovery in that market-driven revenue, and it got a shot in the arm last week from those quarterly grain stocks report. This could be a lot of fun for you, at least potentially a lot more fun than pushing for another round of government payments. We need to continue to encourage the development of new demand sources, feed the demand sources that are already out there. We can't lose track of that, and find those export markets, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, we know that we have a great relationship, and in every administration, we've really cultivated that relationship with the U.S. Trade Authority, right, USTR. And by working closely with those folks, we're bringing some value to the corn grower. They've got a heavy lift, and it's kind of warm. You know, recovery also comes when we engage in trade by working to expand access for U.S. corn places like Southeast Asia and other growth markets for us. You know, there's another vehicle, Liz, as we're talking about those, strengthening our competitiveness by leveraging the sustainability of the U.S. corn to build preference for our products is a way to do that.
Yep.
But, you know, you'd be wrong if you didn't give infrastructure a look, because improving our infrastructure system is yet another way to get a base hit toward a goal of market recovery. So there are so many places that we are plugged in and working on behalf of our industry. We'd like to capture the big ones. We're going to take base hits as they come.
Yep.
You know, my goal here, I have set a personal goal to do everything within my power to help our industry recover and grow. To do that, we'll leave no stone unturned, Chip, when looking for opportunities to recover and grow our industry beyond the current situation.
Love it, John. All right. Well, there's plenty of conversations ahead for you and me. I appreciate you, John. Thank you.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Valent for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
You know, Chip.
Davis, did you know that October 4th through the 10th is National Fire Prevention Week?
Well, you know, I feel like a 45, a pistol, is a lot like a fire extinguisher. Better to have one and not need it than need one and not have it. Am I right?
Have it.
Fair statement?
You went right there. Okay.
I'm going right there. Yes. Big guns, baby.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, let's talk about National Fire Prevention Week with Greta Gustafson from the American Red Cross. Greta, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Glad that you're here. Quick question. The number of fires, now with everybody staying home, and especially because everybody's doing more cooking at home, have the number of home house fires gone up during COVID-19?
That's such a great point. I mean, home fires have not stopped during COVID-19. This is still an active threat, and you're completely right. We actually see that home fires are most often caused by cooking, and this risk really continues as we continue to spend more time at home. So it's more important now than ever to continue thinking about how you're going to be safe from home fires and plan in advance. As Dave said, you know, you want to make sure to plan for the worst and hope for the best. So that's what we're here to provide information on.
Yeah. It seems to me that not only are we seeing more home cooking, but we're seeing more new home cooks. And understanding some of the dangers that they get themselves into, and the best way to get out of some of those dangers, it's unbelievably important for them. I'm thinking of hot grease, Greta. Not only causing some personal injury, but some fire damage to a kitchen that nobody wants to have.
Yeah, that's why we always say keep an eye on what you fry. So really that just means if you're cooking something on the stove, make sure that you stay in the kitchen. You stay in that vicinity. Don't walk away while you have something on the stove. That's just really the easiest way to make sure that you stay safe. But also another great thing is just having working smoke alarms. Make sure to test those alarms. Those smoke alarms are going to cut the risk of death by a home fire in half, because you get that advanced warning of something going wrong. So take time this week, just click that button, make sure they're working properly, and that'll give you a little bit more peace of mind too.
Right, right. And just for those listening, do not use water on a grease fire. Cover it up, put it out, let it burn itself out and exhaust the oxygen in a very confined area, but do not put water on a grease fire. That's when it turns ugly in a hurry. What else do we need to know? I know that you mentioned the fire detectors, the smoke detectors. One of the things that I remember growing up was practicing the escape routes, something that is very important to make sure that if there is a fire, you know how to get out.
That's right. And I think one of the important things that people really don't know is that you need to be able to escape your home in 2 minutes or less. So that 2 minutes is really the time that experts say that you have to get safely out of the house. So practicing your plan in advance, not only just thinking it through, but actually physically practicing it with your family can really make that difference to say, okay, can we do this under 2 minutes? So when that time, if it unfortunately does come, you know you're prepared, you've practiced it, you know how to get out quickly.
Right. Right. Okay, we've talked a lot about, okay, now that a fire has started, what do we do about it? What about on the prevention side of things, Greta? Is there anything else that we can do? I talked about it at the start of the show, thinking about a combine and the number of combine fires that we've seen over the last few years. It seems ridiculous to me. But you got to keep the thing clean. You got to blow the debris off. You got to make sure that you're doing everything that you can to keep the fuel away from those hot spots on a combine. What about in a home setting? What can we do?
As the weather starts to turn cooler, now is really the time to start thinking about that. So if you have a fireplace, making sure that you get that chimney cleaned in advance. If you're using something like a space heater, make sure to keep it away from anything flammable. You don't want to put it on a carpet or have it next to your drapes. Make sure it's on that hard surface away from anything that it could catch on. And same with candles. If you're using fire-burning candles, make sure to keep an eye on those. Don't leave the room while it's burning. And even better yet, consider using flameless candles that are a really safe way to still get that ambiance.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting to that time of the year where there's going to be some celebrations, hopefully some families getting together. We don't want to do anything to ruin the opportunity after what we've been through the last few months, Greta, to ruin that opportunity to get together as families. So let's be safe in holiday preps.
Absolutely. And to get more advice, any more tips, recommend people visit redcross.org/fire. That's going to have all these tips, but also a home fire escape plan that you can print off and practice at home. If you have young kids at home, now's a great time when everyone's at home together during COVID-19 to go through this with them, practice it, and get all those resources that you need.
Yeah, National Fire Prevention Week, October 4th through the 10th. It sure feels like a good time to check the fire extinguishers in the house, in the office, in your boat, in the combine, on the tractor. Those fire extinguishers, literal lifesavers.
That's right. Yeah, no, and thanks for bringing light to this important topic. Definitely encourage everyone to stay safe.
Excellent. All right, Greta, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yep, that's Greta Gustafson, American Red Cross. Just go to redcross.org and you'll get into plenty of the information there that you're looking for on fire prevention. Great show today. Got the week started off strong here, Davis.
Yes, we did. Yeah, it's a good way to start. Yeah.
Come back this afternoon. We got Andy Schisler. That's going to be a lot of fun. And tomorrow morning, it's pork month. October is pork month. Let's get some ideas from Chef Neil on what to do with some of those pork dishes. And we're going to talk election with Wiesmeyer tomorrow on AgriTalk. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.